Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, today we'll be reading various selections for the glorification of Lord Baladev. I'd like to thank everyone for being here. It's always a wonderful opportunity and privilege to serve the Vaishnavas. So I thought I'd begin by reading some translations and purports from the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 2, describing the advent of Lord Baladev. So Lord Baladev, he appeared 1 year and 8 days before Krishna. So it's described in the translation. Some of their relatives, however, began to follow Kamsa's principles. So what was happening this time actually was Devaki and Vasudev had been imprisoned in Kamsa's prison. And Kamsa was killing every single child of Devaki, because upon their wedding day, Kamsa overheard some ominous voice from the sky saying, "You fool, Kamsa, don't you know that Devaki's 8th child will kill you?" And so Kamsa became very fearful, and he set about to kill all of Devaki's children. And so at this point, 6 of Devaki's children had already been killed. So some of their relatives, however, began to follow Kamsa's principles and act in his service. After Kamsa, the son of Ugrasen, killed the 6 sons of Devaki, a plenary portion of Krishna entered her womb as the 7th child, arousing her pleasure and her lamentation. That plenary portion is celebrated by great sages as Ananta, who belongs to Krishna's 2nd quadruple expansion. Purport. Some of the chief devotees, such as Akrura, stayed with Kamsa to satisfy him. This they did for various purposes. They all expected the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear as the 8th child as soon as Devaki's other children were killed by Kamsa, and they were eagerly awaiting his appearance. By remaining in Kamsa's association, they would be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead take birth and display his childhood pastimes. And Akrura would later go to Vrindavan to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. The word prayupasate is significant because it indicates that some devotees wanted to stay near Kamsa in order to see all these pastimes of the Lord. The 6 children killed by Kamsa had formerly been sons of Marichi, but because of having been cursed by a Brahmin, they were obliged to take birth as grandsons of Hiranyakashipu. Kamsa had taken birth as Kalanemi, and now he was obliged to kill his own sons. This was a mystery. As soon as the sons of Devaki were killed, they would return to their original place. The devotees wanted to see this also. Generally speaking, no one kills his own nephews, but Kamsa was so cruel that he did so without hesitation. Ananta, Sankarshan, belongs to the 2nd Chaturvyuha, or quadruple expansion. This is the opinion of experienced commentators. To protect the Yadus, his personal devotees, from Kamsa's attack, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishvatma, the supreme soul of everyone, ordered Yogamaya as follows. I won't read all the purports because some of them are lengthy. The Lord ordered Yogamaya, "O my potency, who are worshipable for the entire world, and whose nature is to bestow good fortune upon all living entities, go to Braja, where there live many cowherd men and their wives. In that very beautiful land where many cows reside, Rohini, the wife of Vasudev, is living at the home of Nanda Maharaj. Other wives of Vasudeva are also living there incognito because of fear of Kamsa. Please go there. Purport. Nanda Gokula, the residence of King Nanda, was itself very beautiful, and when Yogamaya was ordered to go there and encourage the devotees with fearlessness, it became even more beautiful and safe. Because Yogamaya had the ability to create such an atmosphere, the Lord ordered her to go to Nanda Gokula. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial plenary expansion, known as Sankarsan or Sesha. Without difficulty, transfer him into the womb of Rohini. Purport. The first plenary expansion of Krishna is Baladev, also known as Shesha. The Shesha incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead supports the entire universe, and the eternal mother of this incarnation is Mother Rohini. Because I am going into the womb of Devaki, the Lord told Yogamaya, the Shesha incarnation has already gone there and made suitable arrangements so that I may live there. Now he should enter the womb of Rohini, his eternal mother. In this connection, one may ask how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always situated transcendentally, could enter the womb of Devaki, which had previously been entered by the six asuras named the Shadgarbhas. Does this mean that the Shadgarbhasuras were equal to the transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The following answer is given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The entire creation, as well as its individual parts, is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, even though the Lord enters the material world, he does not do so. This is explained by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:4-5. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavashtitaha nacha matstani bhutani pasyame yogam aishvaram bhutam brinna cha bhutasto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. By me in my unmanifest form this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, myself is the very source of creation. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Everything is an expansion of Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet everything is not the Supreme Godhead, and he is not everywhere. Everything rests upon him, and yet does not rest upon him. This can be explained only through the Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy. Such truths cannot be understood, however, unless one is a pure devotee. For the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhaktya mam abhijananti yavanyaschasmi tattvataha. One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is only by devotional service. Even though the Lord cannot be understood by ordinary persons, this principle should be understood from the statement of the Shastras. A pure devotee is always transcendentally situated because of executing 9 different processes of bhakti yoga. Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. Thus situated in devotional service, a devotee, although in the material world, is not in the material world. Yet a devotee always fears, because I am associated with the material world, so many contaminations affect me. Therefore, he is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association. Symbolically, Mother Devaki's constant fear of Kamsa is purifying her. A pure devotee should always fear material association, and in this way, all the asuras of a material association will be killed, as the Shadgarbhasuras were killed by Kamsa. It is said from that mind, Marichi appears. from the mind, Marichi appears. In other words, Marichi is an incarnation of the mind. Marichi has 6 sons, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in pure devotional service. This is confirmed in the Vedas. Bhaktir evainam darshayati. Only bhakti can bring one in contact with the Supreme Personality Godhead. The Supreme Personality Godhead appeared from the womb of Devaki, and therefore Devaki symbolically represents bhakti, and Kamsa symbolically represents material fear. When a pure devotee always fears material association, his real position of bhakti is manifested, and he naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyment. When the six sons of Marichi are killed by such fear, and one is freed from material contamination, within the womb of bhakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. Thus, the seventh pregnancy of Devaki signifies the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead after the six sons of Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya are killed. The Shesha incarnation creates a suitable situation for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, when one awakens his natural Krishna consciousness, Lord Krishna appears. This is the explanation given by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So in this connection, I've also heard that Lord Baladev, he's known as Adi Guru. He's the first and original expansion of Krishna. And he instructs everyone about Krishna's glories. And so, in this connection with this purport also, Lord Baladev appeared, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, he appeared to make a suitable situation for the appearance of Krishna. So in the same way, our guru makes a suitable situation within our consciousness for Krishna to appear there also. And then it goes on to explain, Krishna goes on to explain to Yogamaya how she will appear next within the womb of Devaki after Lord Baladev. The son of Rohini will also be celebrated as Sankarshan. Because of being sent from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, he will be called Rama because of his ability to please all the inhabitants of Gokula. And he will be known as Balabhadra because of his extensive physical strength. Purport. These are some of the reasons why Balaram is known as Sankarshan, Balaram, or sometimes Rama. In the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. People sometimes object when Rama is accepted as Balaram. But although devotees of Lord Rama may object, they should know that there is no difference between Balaram and Lord Rama. Here, Srimad Bhagavatam clearly states that Balaram is also known as Rama, Rameti. Therefore, it is not artificial for us to speak of Lord Balaram as Lord Rama. Jayadev Goswami also speaks of three Ramas, Parashurama, Raghupati Rama, and Balaram. All of them are Ramas. When the child of Devaki was attracted and transferred into the womb of Rohini by Yogamaya, Devaki seemed to have a miscarriage. Thus all the inhabitants of the palace loudly lamented, "Alas, Devaki has lost her child." Purport. All the inhabitants of the palace includes Kamsa. When everyone lamented, Kamsa joined in compassion, thinking that perhaps because of drugs or some other external means, Devaki had undergone this abortion. The real story of what happened when Yogamaya attracted the child of Devaki into the womb of Rohini in the seventh month of Rohini's pregnancy is described as follows in the Harivamsa. At midnight, while Rohini was deeply sleeping, she experienced, as if in a dream, that she had undergone a miscarriage. After some time, when she awoke, she saw that this had indeed happened, and she was in great anxiety. But Yogamaya then informed her, "O auspicious lady, your child is now being replaced. I am attracting a child from the womb of Devaki, and therefore your child will be known as Sankarshan. The word Yoga Nidra is significant. When one is spiritually connected through self-realization, one regards his material life as having been like a dream, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:69. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyan jagrati samyami yasyang jagrati bhutani sa nisha pashyato munehe. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. The stage of self-realization is called Yoga Nidra. All material activities appear to be a dream when one is awakened, spiritually awakened. Thus, Yoga Nidra may be explained to be Yoga Maya. So that gave a brief explanation about Lord Baladev's appearance within this planet. And then I'll read a few other things, just talking a little bit more about Lord Balaram. This is from the third chapter of the first canto, text 23. In the 19th and 20th incarnations, the Lord advented himself as Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna in the family of Vrishni, the Yadu dynasty. And by doing so, he removed the burden of the world. Purport. The specific mention of the word Bhagavan in this text indicates that Balaram and Krishna are the original forms of the Lord. This will be further explained later. Lord Krishna is not an incarnation of the Purusha, as we learn from the beginning of this chapter. By Purusha, it's talking about the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Karnadakshay Vishnu, and Kshirodakshay Vishnu. He is directly the original personality of Godhead, and Balaram is the first plenary manifestation of the Lord. From Baladev, the first phalanx of plenary expansions, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, and Pradyumna, expands. Lord Sri Krishna is Vasudev, and Baladev is Sankarshan. Next is from the 14th chapter of the first canto, texts 28 and 29. Are Ugrasen, whose son was the mischievous Kamsa, and his younger brother still living? Are Hridika and his sons Kritavarma happy? Are Akrura, Jayanta, Gada, Sarana, and Shatrujit all happy? How is Balaram the personality of Godhead and the protector of the devotees? Purport. Hastinapura, the capital of the Pandavas, was situated somewhere near present New Delhi, and the kingdom of Ugrasen was situated in Mathura. While returning from Delhi from Dwarka, Arjuna must have visited the city of Mathura, and therefore the inquiry about the king Mathura was valid. Amongst various names of relatives, the name of Rama or Balaram, eldest brother of Lord Krishna, is added with the words, the personality of Godhead. Because Lord Balaram is the immediate expansion of Vishnu Tattva as Prakasha Vigraha of Lord Krishna. The Supreme Lord, although one without a second, expands himself as many other living beings. The Vishnu Tattva living beings are expansions of the Supreme Lord, and all of them are qualitatively and quantitatively equal with the Lord. But expansions of the Jiva Shakti, the category of the ordinary living beings, are not at all equal with the Lord. One who considers the Jiva Shakti and the Vishnu Tattva to be on an equal level is considered a condemned soul of the world. Sri Rama, or Balaram, is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. Baladeva acts as the spiritual master of all devotees, and by his causeless mercy the fallen souls are delivered. Sri Baladeva appeared as Sri Nityananda Prabhu during the advent of Lord Chaitanya, and the great Nityananda Prabhu exhibited his causeless mercy by delivering a pair of extremely fallen souls, namely Jagai and Madai. Therefore, it is particularly mentioned herein that Balaram is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. By his divine grace, only one can approach the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And thus, Sri Balaram is the mercy incarnation of the Lord, manifested as the spiritual master, the savior of the pure devotees. Then I forgot to pull the reference, but this is from one lecture the Prabhupada gave, a Bhagavatam lecture, in his commentary. Prabhupada says, in the Upanishads it stated, Nayam Atma Bala Nihena Labhya. The purport is that one cannot attain the supreme platform of self-realization without being sufficiently favored by Balaram. Bala does not mean physical strength. No one can attain spiritual perfection by physical strength. One must have the spiritual strength which is infused by Balaram or Sankarshan. Ananta or Sesha is the source of the power which sustains all the planets in their different positions. Materially, this sustaining power is known as the law of gravitation, but actually, it's a display of the potency of Sankarshan. Balaram or Sankarshan is the source of spiritual power, or the original spiritual master. Therefore, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is also the incarnation of Balaram, is the original spiritual master. And the spiritual master is the representative of Lord Balaram, or the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who supplies spiritual strength. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's confirmed that the spiritual master is the manifestation of the mercy of Krishna. And then, from here we'll get into a few different pastimes and characteristics of Lord Baladev. So in the Nectar of Devotion in chapter 29, entitled Expressions of Love for Krishna, there's one subsection called Intoxication that describes one way in which Lord Baladev expresses his love for Krishna. When one becomes arrogant with false prestige due to drinking intoxicants or being too lustful, the voice becomes faulty, the eyes become swollen, and there are symptoms of redness on the body. There's a statement in the Lilita Madhava that Lord Baladev, intoxicated from drinking excessive quantities of honey, once began to address the ants. Oh, you kings of the ants, why are you hiding yourselves in those holes? At the same time, he also addressed the King of Heaven. O King Indra, you plaything of Shachi, why are you laughing? I am now prepared to smash the whole universe, and I know that Krishna will not be angry with me. Then he addressed Krishna. My dear Krishna, tell me immediately why the whole world is trembling and why the moon has become elongated. And O you members of the Yadu dynasty, why are you laughing at me? Please give me back my liquors made of honey from the Kadamba flower. Srila Rupa Goswami prays that Lord Balaram will be pleased with all of us while he is thus talking just like an intoxicated person. In this state of intoxication, Balaram felt tired and lay down for rest. Generally, those who are exalted personalities lie down when they feel intoxicated, whereas those who are mediocre laugh and sing during intoxication. And those who are lowly use vulgar language and sometimes cry. Such intoxication is manifested according to different ages and mentalities. Srila Rupa Goswami does not describe further in this direction because there is no necessity for such a discussion. So then next is a pastime from the Krishna book. And all the rest of the excerpts will be taken from the Krishna book. This is from chapter 8, entitled Vision of the Universal Form. So at this point, Gargamuni had just told Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda all about Krishna and Balaram and explained their different names and explained to Nanda Maharaj that Krishna is actually Narayan himself. A short time after this incident, both Balaram and Krishna began to crawl on their hands and knees. When they were crawling like that, they pleased their mothers. The bells tied to their waists and ankles sounded fascinating, and they would move around very pleasingly, sometimes just like ordinary children. They would be frightened by others and would immediately hurry to their mothers for protection. Sometimes they would fall to the clay and mud of Vrindavan and would approach their mothers smeared with clay and saffron. They were actually smeared with saffron and sandalwood pulp by their mothers. But due to crawling over muddy clay, they would simultaneously smear their bodies with clay. As soon as they would come crawling to their mothers, Yashoda and Rohini would take them on their laps and, covering them with the lower portion of their saris, allow them to suck their breasts. When the babies were sucking their breasts, the mothers would see small teeth coming in. Thus their joy would be intensified to see their children grow. Sometimes the naughty babies would crawl up to the cowshed, catch the tail of a calf, and stand up. The calves, being disturbed, would immediately begin running here and there, and the children would be dragged over the clay and cow dung. To see this fun, Yashoda and Rohini would call all the neighborhood friends, the gopis. Upon seeing these childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna, the gopis would be merged in transcendental bliss. In their enjoyment, they would laugh very loudly. Krishna and Balaram were so restless that their mothers, Yashoda and Rohini, would try to protect them from the cows, bulls, monkeys, water, fire, and birds while they were executing their household duties. Always being anxious to protect their children and to execute their duties, they were not very tranquil. In a very short time, Krishna and Balaram began to stand up and slightly move on their legs. When Krishna and Balaram began to walk, with other friends of the same age joined them, and together they gave the highest transcendental pleasure to the gopis, specifically to Mother Yashoda and Rohini. All the gopi friends of Yashoda and Rohini enjoyed the naughty childish activities of Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. In order to enjoy further transcendental bliss, they all assembled and went to Mother Yashoda to lodge complaints against the restless boys. When Krishna was sitting before Mother Yashoda, all the elderly gopis began to lodge complaints against him so that Krishna could hear. They said, "Dear Yashoda, why don't you restrict your naughty Krishna? He comes to our houses along with Balaram every morning and evening. And before milking of the cows, they let loose the calves, and the calves drink all the milk of the cows. So when we go to milk the cows, we find no milk, and we have to return with empty pots. If we warn Krishna and Balaram about doing this, they simply smile so charmingly that we cannot do anything. Also, your Krishna and Balaram find great pleasure in stealing our stock of yogurt and butter from wherever we keep it. When Krishna and Balaram are caught stealing the yogurt and butter, they say, 'Why do you charge us with stealing? Do you think that butter and yogurt are in scarcity in our house?' Sometimes they steal butter, yogurt, and milk and distribute them to the monkeys. When the monkeys are well fed and do not take any more, then your boys chide, 'This milk and butter and yogurt are useless. Even the monkeys won't take it.' And they break the pots and throw them hither and thither. If we keep our stock of yogurt, butter, and milk in a solitary dark place, your Krishna and Balaram find it in the darkness by the glaring effulgence of the ornaments and jewels on their bodies. If by chance they cannot find the hidden butter and yogurt, they go to our little babies and pinch their bodies so they cry, and then they go away. If out of fear of these naughty boys we keep our stock of butter and yogurt high on the ceiling, hanging on a swing, although it's beyond their reach, they arrange to reach it by piling all kinds of wooden planks over the grinding machine. And if they cannot reach, then they make a small hole in the pot. We think, therefore, that you'd better take all the jeweled ornaments from the bodies of your children." On hearing this, Yashoda would say, "All right, I'll take all the jewels from Krishna so that he cannot see the butter hidden in the darkness." Then the gopis would say, "No, no, don't do this. What good will you do by taking away the jewels? We do not know what kind of boys these are. But even without ornaments, they spread some kind of effulgence, so that even in darkness they can see everything." Then Mother Yashoda would inform them, "All right, keep your butter and yogurt carefully so that they do not reach it." In reply to this, the gopi said, "Yes, actually we do so. But because we are sometimes engaged in our household duties, these naughty boys enter our house somehow or other and spoil everything. Sometimes, being unable to steal our butter and yogurt, out of anger, they pass urine on the clean floor and sometimes spit on it. Now just see how your boy is hearing these complaints. All day he simply makes arrangements to steal our butter and yogurt. And now he is sitting just like a very silent good boy. Just see his face. When Mother Yashoda thought to chastise her boy after hearing all the complaints, she saw his pitiable face, and smiling she did not chastise him. Another day when Krishna and Balaram were playing with their friends, all the boys joined Balaram and complained to Mother Yashoda that Krishna had eaten clay. On hearing this, Mother Yashoda caught hold of Krishna's hand and said, "My dear Krishna, why have you eaten earth in a solitary place? Just see all your friends, including Balaram, are complaining about you." Being afraid of his mother, Krishna replied, "My dear mother, all these boys, including my elder brother Balaram, are speaking lies against me. I've never eaten clay. My elder brother Balaram, while playing with me today, became angry, and therefore he has joined with the other boys to complain against me. They have all combined together to complain so that you'll be angry and chastise me. If you think they are truthful, then you can look within my mouth to see whether I have eaten clay or not." His mother replied, "All right, if you have actually not eaten any clay, then just open your mouth, I shall see." When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was ordered by his mother, he immediately opened his mouth, and just like an ordinary boy, then Mother Yashoda saw within his mouth the complete opulence of creation. So then it goes on to describe this opulence that she saw. So these are some very early childhood pastimes of Lord Balaram. And then later on, we get to the killing of the demon Pralambasura. So Krishna and Balaram and the other cowherd boys were having sporting pastimes in the forest of Vrindavan. And then there's this one asura named Pralambasura. And he was seeing Krishna and Balaram playing with all their associates, and he was very envious. And so he wanted to kill Krishna. Once while the boys were engaged in their transcendental pastimes, a great demon of the name Pralambasura entered their company, desiring to kidnap both Balaram and Krishna. Although Krishna was playing the part of a cowherd boy, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could understand everything, past, present, and future. So when Pralambasura entered their company, Krishna began to think how to kill the demon. But externally, he received him as a friend. "Oh, my dear friend," he said, "it's very good that you have come to take part in our pastimes." Krishna then called all his friends and ordered them, "Now we shall play in pairs. We shall challenge one another in pairs." With this proposal, all the boys assembled together. Some of them took the side of Krishna, and some of them took the side of Balaram, and they arranged to play in duel. The defeated members in duel fighting had to carry the victorious members on their back. So this duel fighting is explained that one of the boys would sit on the shoulders of the other boys, and then they would go up against each other and fight. So the defeated members in duel fighting had to carry the victorious members on their backs, as a horse carries its master. They began playing, and at the same time tending the cows as they proceeded through the Vrindavan, the Bandiravana forest. The party of Balaram, accompanied by Sri Dama and Vrishabha, came out victorious, and Krishna's party had to carry them on their backs through the Bandiravana forest. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, being defeated, had to carry Sri Dama on his back, and Vajrasena carried Vrishabha. Imitating their play, Pralambasura, who appeared there as a cowherd boy, carried Balaram on his back. Pralambasura was the greatest of demons, and he had calculated that Krishna was the most powerful of the cowherd boys. In order to avoid the company of Krishna, Pralambasura carried Balaram away. The demon was undoubtedly very strong and powerful, but he was carrying Balaram, who is compared to a mountain. Therefore he began to feel the burden, and thus he assumed his real form. When he appeared in his real feature, it was decorated with a golden helmet and earrings and looked just like a cloud with lightning carrying the moon. Balaram observed the demon's body expanding up to the limits of the clouds, and his eyes dazzling like blazing fire, and his mouth flashing with sharpened teeth. At first Balaram was surprised by the demon's appearance, and he began to wonder, how is it that all of a sudden this carrier has changed in every way? But with a clear mind he could quickly understand that he was being carried away from his friends by a demon who intended to kill him. Immediately he struck the head of the demon with his strong fist, just as the king of the heavenly planet strikes a mountain with his thunderbolt. Being stricken by the fist of Balaram, the demon fell down dead, just like a snake with a smashed head, and blood poured from his mouth. When the demon fell, he made a tremendous sound, and it sounded as if a great hill were falling upon being struck by a thunderbolt of King Indra. All the boys then rushed to the spot. Astonished by the ghastly scene, they began to praise Balaram with the words, "Well done! Well done!" All of them then embraced Balaram with great affection, thinking that he had returned from death, and they offered their blessings and congratulations. All the demigods in the heavenly planets became very satisfied and showered flowers on the transcendental body of Balaram, and they also offered their blessings and congratulations for having killed the great demon Pralambasura. And then another pastime, I'll just summarize, was the Brahma Vimohana Lila. And in this pastime, Lord Brahma was trying to test the mystic potency of Krishna. But Lord Brahma didn't realize Krishna's real potency. He just thought, oh, this is some little blue cowherd boy. What possible power can he have? He's just a child. And so Lord Brahma stole all the cows and calves. I'm sorry, all the calves and the boys. And the reason why Balaram wasn't included in this is because it was actually his appearance day. And he was receiving a special bath to prepare him for distribution of charity later on in the day. And so Baladev actually wasn't aware of what was actually happening. And so when Krishna saw that his friends and his calves had all been stolen, he manifested identical copies of all those calves and cowherd boys. And so all the calves and cowherd boys came back with Krishna, and they went back to their mothers, and they continued their playing day in, day out. And it's called the Vimohana Lila because everyone, including Lord Baladev, was bewildered by Krishna's display of his mystic power. Even Lord Baladev, he was bewildered by this display of mystic opulence for almost the entire year. It wasn't until 1 week before Lord Brahma came back that Lord Baladev figured that there was something suspicious happening. Because Lord Baladev was seeing how the mothers of the cowherd boys and the mothers of these calves were responding with inordinate affection. They were responding exactly the same way as everyone would respond to Krishna. So Baladev was thinking, something really strange is happening here, and I think that Krishna is behind it. So he went and he approached Krishna and he explained what he was noticing, and he said, I think that you're behind this. What's going on? And so Krishna said, well, yes, actually I am behind this. You see, Lord Brahma, he stole all of our friends and he stole all of our calves. So I'm just playing a trick on Lord Brahma. Then 1 week later, Lord Brahma came back and the rest of that pastime happened. So even Lord Baladev can be bewildered by Krishna. Then there's another nice pastime. later on in the Krishna book, where Krishna's eldest son, Pradyumna, who is Cupid personified, wants to marry the daughter of the granddaughter of Rukmi. So this is from chapter 61 of Krishna book. Pradyumna, the eldest son of Krishna, born of Rukmini, was Cupid himself. He was so beautiful and attractive that the daughter of Rukmi, namely Rukmavati, could not select any husband other than Pradyumna during his Swayamvar. Therefore, in that selection meeting, she garlanded Pradyumna in the presence of all other princes. When there was a fight amongst the princes, Pradyumna came out victorious, and therefore Rukmi was obliged to offer his beautiful daughter to Pradyumna. Although enmity always blazed in Rukmi's heart because of having been insulted by Krishna, kidnapping his sister, Rukmi could not resist consenting to the marriage ceremony just to please Rukmini when his daughter selected Pradyumna as her husband. And so Pradyumna became the son-in-law as well as the nephew of Rukmi. Besides the 10 sons described above, Rukmini had one beautiful daughter with big eyes, and she was married to Kritavarma's son, whose name was Bali. Although Rukmi was a veritable enemy of Krishna, he had great affection for his sister Rukmini and wanted to please her in all respects. On this account, when Rukmini's grandson Aniruddha was to be married, Rukmi offered his granddaughter Rochana to Aniruddha. Such marriage between immediate cousins is not very much sanctioned by the Vedic culture. But in order to please Rukmini, Rukmi offered his daughter and granddaughter to the son and grandson of Krishna, respectively. In this way, when the negotiation of the marriage of Aniruddha with Rochana was complete, a big marriage party accompanied Aniruddha and started from Dwarka. They traveled until they reached Bhojakatta, which Rukmi had colonized after his sister had been kidnapped by Krishna. This marriage party was led by the grandfather, namely Lord Krishna, accompanied by Lord Balaram, and it included Krishna's first wife, Rukmini, his son, Pradyumna, Jambavati's son, Samba, and many other relatives and family members. They reached the town of Bhojakatta, and the marriage ceremony was peacefully performed. The king of Kalinga was a friend of Rukmi and gave him the ill advice to play chess with Balaram and thus defeat him in a bet. Among Kshatriya kings, betting and gambling in chess was not uncommon. If someone challenged a Kshatriya to play on the chessboard, the Kshatriya could not refuse the challenge. Sri Balaramji was not a very expert chess player, and this was known to the king of Kalinga. So Rukmi was advised to retaliate against the family members of Krishna by challenging Balaram to play chess. Although not an expert chess player, Sri Balaramji was very enthusiastic in sporting activities. He accepted Rukmini's challenge and sat down to play. Betting was with gold coins, and Balaram, first of all, challenged with 100 coins. Then 1,000 coins, then 10,000 coins. Each time Balaram lost, and Rukmi was victorious. Sri Balaram's losing the game was an opportunity for the king of Kalinga to criticize Krishna and Balaram. Thus the king of Kalinga was talking jokingly, while purposefully showing his teeth to Balaram. Because Balaram was the loser in the game, he was a little intolerant to the sarcastic joking words, and became somewhat agitated. Rukmi again challenged Balaram and made a bet of 100,000 gold coins. But fortunately, this time Balaram won. Nonetheless, out of cunningness, Rukmi claimed that Balaram was the loser and that he himself had won. Because of this lie, Balaramji became most angry with Rukmi. His agitation was so sudden and great that it appeared like a tidal wave in the ocean on a full moon day. Balaram's eyes are naturally reddish, and when he became agitated and angry, his eyes became more reddish. This time he challenged and made a bet of 100 million coins. Again, Balaram was the winner, according to the rules of chess. But Rukmi again cunningly claimed that he had won. Rukmi appealed to the princess present, the prince's present, and he especially mentioned the name of the king of Kalinga. During the dispute, there was a voice from the sky, and it announced that for all honest purposes, Balaram was the actual winner of this game, that he was being abused, and that the statement of Rukmi that he had won was absolutely false. In spite of this divine voice, Rukmi insisted that Balaram had lost, and by his persistence it appeared that he had death upon his head. Falsely puffed up by the ill advice of his friend, he did not give much importance to the oracle, and he began to criticize Balaramji, saying, "My dear Balaramji, you two brothers, cowherd boys only, may be very expert in tending cows, but how can you be expert in playing chess or shooting arrows on the battlefield? These arts are well known only to the princely order." Hearing this kind of pinching taught by Rukmi, and hearing the loud laughter of all the other princes present there, Lord Balaram became as agitated as burning cinders. He immediately took his club in his hand, and without further talk, struck Rukmi on the head. From that one blow, Rukmi fell down immediately and was dead and gone. Thus, Rukmi was killed by Balaram on that auspicious occasion of Aniruddha's marriage. These things are not very uncommon in Kshatriya society. The king of Kalinga said that he would be the next one attacked. Afraid that he would be the next one attacked, fled from the scene. Before he could escape in a few steps, however, Balaramji immediately captured him. And because the king had always shown his teeth while criticizing Balaram and Krishna, Balaram broke all of the king's teeth with his club. The other princes supporting the king of Kalinga and Rukmi were also captured, and Balaram beat them with his club, breaking their legs and hands. They did not try to retaliate, but thought it was wise to run away from the bloody scene. During this strife between Balaram and Rukmi, Lord Krishna did not utter a word, for he knew that if he supported Balaram, Rukmini would be unhappy. And if he said that the killing of Rukmi was unjust, then Balaram would be unhappy. Therefore, Lord Krishna was silent on the death of his brother-in-law, Rukmi, on the occasion of his grandson's marriage. He did not disturb his affectionate relationship with either Balaram or Rukmini. After this, the bride and bridegroom were ceremoniously seated on the chariot, and they started for Dwaraka, accompanied by the bridegroom's party. So, don't mess with Lord Baladev. We'll end there. All glories to Sri Balaram Ki Jai.